We have a lot to talk about. The Dayton Art Institute is opening two exhibitions next weekend, and your fall season is underway. So let's start with these upcoming shows, and one of them is Medieval Alabaster Sculpture from London's Victoria and Albert Museum, and the other is work by contemporary artist Elizabeth Turk that relates to the medieval pieces in interesting ways. Tell us about these shows.
Well, I first started thinking about bringing the Victoria and Albert alabasters to the museum before I even actually physically arrived in Dayton, because, as you know, I've just started there. I'm almost approaching my one-year anniversary. So last year, when I started thinking about shows to bring in, I thought this is such a fantastic group of objects from the most exquisite collection of these in the world. What better way to start off than bring these to Dayton, Ohio? They're just fabulous examples of carving from that period. They're devotional in nature, but I think that they speak to just a wide appeal from many different levels. And when I realized that the alabaster show wouldn't fill the entire footprint of the space, I began to think of other forms of devotion and faith, but maybe from a secular context, which is why I then started thinking about the work by Elizabeth Turk.
Well, tell us something about her work.
I've been following her work for years, and she is a contemporary marble sculptor. She is a MacArthur Genius Grant awardee, and she works in marble. And on the eve of the millennium, she conceived of this project called Wings that are over life-sized pieces of wings that she's carved, kind of based on the idea of the Neoplatonic idea of the soul kind of being trapped on earth and not able to reach the heavens. And she thought about it on the sort of a moment of personal struggle where she was questioning a lot of bigger picture things, both personally and also on the eve of the millennium, questioning bigger things about the direction that we were heading as a people. So I thought it was an interesting pairing, one being very sacred, devotional, but one being very secular and personal.
Does the Victoria and Albert exhibition have any particular relationship to the permanent collection there, or is it bringing wholly new material to your visitors?
We do not have any alabaster reliefs. We do have a number of limestone, early limestone polychrome sculpture that do relate subject matter and time period-wise, and a number of them we will integrate into the show to give viewers an example of what we have in our permanent collection that does relate. We also have a really wonderful collection of drawings that are some from the period, but many of which are later, that are relating in subject matter that will also be within the period of the show. And one other really great thing I'm so excited about is that we are borrowing from a private collector 9 early medieval manuscripts. The earliest English Bible in private hands, which is from about 1260, will be in the exhibition. A leaf from the Gutenberg Bible, some illuminated manuscripts. So we're really rounding this show out, and I'm so thrilled to be able to bring this all together for the public.
Well, what should people look for when they're looking at the alabaster? The quality of the material, the workmanship? What makes these works special?
My sense is that when people think about sculpture, they think about marble or limestone or granite, not necessarily alabaster. Mm-hmm. And the quality of alabaster is so unique because of the tonality of it. It's creamier. It really mimics skin. It has a warmer feeling than marble. And that was chosen on purpose because it really communicated a kinship with the person that was practicing their devotion of their faith. They felt that that made them relate more to the figures that were depicted in the carvings. So they felt closer to the saints and to the religious figures because of the skin tone of the alabaster. It is a uniquely British material. There were mines that they were tapping in Great Britain to mine this alabaster. And it really was a really early example of a thriving industry in medieval Europe. We will have some videos on how these pieces were mined and how the carving process to really kind of give people a sense of the differences between marble and alabaster. There'll be a place where they can touch a piece of alabaster, touch marble and limestone, and really get a sense of the feel and the texture and the quality of the stone.
Do you have special programming in connection with these exhibitions?
We do. We are bringing in a couple of distinguished speakers. We're bringing in Elizabeth Turk herself. So if you're not yet a member, there's a special members-only preview event on Friday night, October 26th, and Elizabeth will be there to meet and greet. But she's giving an artist talk the following day on the 26th at 2 p.m. where she'll talk about her work and the process that is involved. And then we're also bringing in a speaker, Stephen Perkinson from Bowdoin College, who was involved in the exhibition in its early conception, and he's written an essay in the catalog. And that will be on Saturday, November 16th at 3 p.m.
Well, I understand that you have other smaller exhibitions going on this fall as well, and I'd like to know more about the one called A Buckeye Abroad.
Yes, that show came kind of late in the game, and I did my graduate work in Cleveland, Ohio, and I was organizing an art patron travel group trip back to Cleveland to visit some former friends and colleagues. And one of the trips is we went to visit a gallerist, Bill Tregoning and Company, in Cleveland. He and a former professor and I were talking about this group of Frank Wilcox watercolors that had been recently discovered. They were lost and found in a steamer trunk in the attic of a descendant of this Cleveland school artist, Frank Wilcox, who was a prominent watercolorist in the early part of the 20th century. And this group of watercolors represents his first trip to Paris when he was about 19 years old, 1910, 1911, just a beautiful, naive period in European history before the eve, of the World War I. And these are just gorgeous, gorgeous atmospheric watercolors representing the streets of Paris. And so we're really excited. There are over 70 of these watercolors and a few of the later paintings that accompany the early watercolors. So we're thrilled about being able to bring these to share with the Ohio public.
Well, and you have another show of photographs of Paris.
We do.
That is an interesting contrast, I should
say.
Well,
and I really wanted to, I'm all about trying to reconnect people with Dayton's own collection. And so the photographs by Eugène Atget are 22 photographs from our own collection that represent Paris, the same streets that Frank Wilcox was traversing at around the same time, except the medium is different. So these are photographs. And there's a great Ohio connection with these Atget photographs. Springfield, Ohio's own native, Berenice Abbott, studied with Man Ray in Paris, met and befriended Eugène Atget, who was quite elderly at the time, fell in love with his work, but realized that he just wasn't his own best champion and his work needed to get out there. So she ended up buying his archives and the glass negatives and reprinted the photographs. So in the collection on view, all but one are reprinted by Berenice Abbott. So she printed and published them. One is by Atget himself, who printed it. And then we have one on view of her work. So it's a really great time to see another Ohio artist in context with a wonderful French artist.
Your building is unusual and quite beautiful. And I think it was modeled after two particular Renaissance villas?
It was. It was designed by Edward B. Green, who also designed the Toledo Museum of Art. So if anybody gets up there and notices some similarities, you're not mistaken. It was the same architect. But Dayton's museum was based on the Villa Farnese and another Italian Renaissance villa. And it's kind of a hybrid model of the two combined together. And so we're really fortunate to have this architectural landmark to call our own. It's nearing 100 years old. So there are definitely some challenges with some building issues. But nevertheless, it's a gorgeous building and a perfect venue to see a great collection.
And what are your core collections in the museum, your special strengths?
I would say the American collection is quite strong. The early 20th century, we have a painting by Edward Hopper. We have a really wonderful collection of American Impressionist works, Arthur Wesley Dow and some other people from that time period in school, colonial portraits. We have a pretty good modern collection of American work. And in terms of our European collection strength, Italian Baroque is a really strong, strong area of the collection. So I think that actually will also pair nicely with the Alabaster Show because people will be able to see painted representations of a lot of the saints that they'll be seeing in Alabaster reliefs. We've got a quite strong African collection with a number of textiles and important pieces. A pre-Columbian, we have the only funerary mask, a complete gold mask in our pre-Columbian collection, so that's definitely worth a visit alone. Our Asian collection is quite strong. It's really, there are a lot of hidden gems. I'm still getting to know all of them, but it's a really wonderful collection. I think it's often overlooked, but I would encourage people to come by and come again.
Amy, thanks so much for coming here to talk about the Dayton Art Institute with us and to tell us about the interesting things that go on there.
Thank you so much.
We've been talking with Amy Marcereau de Gallen, curator at the Dayton Art Institute. For a link to more information, cwvxu.org. For Around Cincinnati, this is Jane Durrell.